Being Unitarian Universalist, you'll all recognize the line "on the dying of the light" as coming from Dylan Thomas, that says, "Old age should rage against the dying of the light, and we should not go gentle into that good night." Well, as old age this year is stumbling to an end, it's a year like any other year, filled with those, as Walter Cronkite used to say, events that alter and illuminate our lives, births and deaths, wars, and the end, possibly, of at least one war. We have things to review, things to regret, things to rejoice as this year comes to a blessed end, as far as I'm concerned. As Bill said, this is a time of the dying of the light physically, when the days grow shorter, the nights grow longer, the world, even in Southern California, turns relatively cold, but we don't get a lot of sympathy from our relatives in Chicago, I understand. But it is relatively cold. It's brisk, you know, you can wear a vest. The trees actually do change color about 2 months later than in the rest of the world, but they change color and the leaves go from green to gold to red to brown and then fall as if dead upon the ground. And in the words of the Gospels, many of us are sore afraid. We may not rage against the dying of the light, but we anxiety against the dying of the light. There is something primal and primitive as we sense the days growing shorter. There is indeed something possibly in our limbic system that says, you know, it's getting dark, it's getting cold, and what promise do we have that it's going to get warm again? That the days will grow long again, that the nights will grow shorter, that the flowers will return, that life will return to the earth, and something will lift our dark spirits. We may know it with our heads today about how the world turns and how the cycles go. Our early ancestors didn't necessarily know it with the same science, but observationally, they would watch the days grow shorter, and then at the shortest day and the longest night, they would start to look for the sun to return, for the seasons to keep their promise. They came to believe that somewhere around December 25th, it was going to be relatively safe to have a party, because the sky would keep its promise. The days were growing longer, and though the very heart of winter lay ahead, there was this intimation that spring would come back. And I think that this, both the anxiety and the intimation of return, are what make this season so interesting and at times so difficult, hidden in all of the joy. You can feel the anxiety out there in the world. People are driving differently, more aggressively. People seem to be worried. Even in a good economy, people get worried and anxious at this season. And I think it's something deep. Sometimes we look at our world and the crazy commercialism of it and think, you know, maybe all of this anxiety is coming because of the commercialism, because I'm so worried about what I'm going to get the kids and what I'm going to get the grandkids and what I'm going to get those 50 people in the extended family of different religions and ethnicities, all of whom have food issues. And what am I going to do? And we busy ourselves with those anxieties. I don't think that's the cause. I think that's the therapy. I think that it's the logical fallacy of post hoc ergo propter hoc, that the rooster causes the sunrise. we get involved in these distractions of what gifts to give, of having to be somewhere, of having to do all of these things, because there's something biological that's calling to our primitive, atavistic brain that says, the fire's going out. The days are getting shorter. And I don't know that I'm going to come back from this. I don't know that the world is going to come back from this. And so this dying of the light becomes something real in the Northern Hemisphere, and also something metaphorical. It's something that mirrors as well as causes a reminder of our own cycles of life, of light and of darkness, of gloom and of hope and of rejoicing. That we acknowledge in our religious traditions that there are times of despair. There are times when the light seems to go out. It's not accidental that Christmas, Saturnalia, and Mithramas are all on December 25th, when the sun has begun to keep its promise. It's not accidental that Hanukkah, although moving around a bit in the calendar, comes when it does, and its symbol, too, is light, and the light that doesn't go out. In fact, the center candle called the Shamus, its name is derived from a pre-Hebrew word and a cognate in Arabic, al-Shamash, who was the god of the sun. And the Arabic word for the sun in the sky is Shemesh. And that's the source. The Hanukkah story of a transient military victory against all odds and the taking back of the temple, that part is factual. The part about the oil that burned for 8 days that was only supposed to burn overnight, that didn't show up until 150 years after the fact. It showed up as a metaphor. As a metaphor about hope and despair. About how the light can seem to go out from the sky, from our own hearts, our own souls. But there is and can be an ember, a knowledge, something that we could call even faith, that we are part of a natural cycle, that we are part of our despair is as normal as our joy. And at this season, we light fires. We light candles. We used to put live candles on live Christmas trees. Not the smartest religious ritual that it was ever created. But now we put lights on them. We light menorahs. We light Yule logs. We foretell the spring. We foretell the spring in terms of the environment, and we foretell the spring in terms of our own hearts. There is no one who lives who has not at some time had a brush with a midnight of the soul. The world is so different now that with our illuminations and light, my midnights of the soul tend to come at 3 o'clock rather than at midnight itself. But most of us have had times of fear, of anxiety, of despair, transient feelings of hopelessness, wondering, will it ever be okay again? Will I ever be okay again? Everyone who lives long enough will suffer losses. Losses of the lives of people whom we love, losses of jobs, losses of health, losses at times seemingly even of hope. But this season is consecrated by all faiths at this time in the Northern Hemisphere. It's consecrated by all faiths that the sun returns. The trees bear fruit again. Our lives, our hearts, our souls bear fruit again. There's a wonderful line and image by the Unitarian poet E.E. Cummings that talks about blowing on the embers of the heart. And there are times when the spark, when the light in our eyes, when the life in our hearts seems to go away, but like the light that wouldn't die, like the rebirth of Mithra, the undying sun, like the solstice itself, there is that ember, and even when we can't see it, even when that ember of hope and hopefulness seems to go out, our social, faithful contract with one another is to know that that spark is there, and to remind each other that that spark is there, and to blow upon the embers of each other's hearts, to fan it into a flame that will illuminate, and not blind, that will warm and not burn. That's what we do when we come together at the beginning of winter. That's what we do when we make a joyful noise with all of the fear and with all of the anxiety. That's what we do when we come together to sing. We are in some ways singing the sunrise. We are making the sun come back because of our beliefs. And then we are taking that warmth, that hope, that post-solstice rebirth of life and saying, yes, I know the winter lies ahead. And yes, I know that the sun will return. The sun sets, the sun also rises in our world, in our solar system, and most importantly, in our hearts when we recognize that spark and each other. When we take the time to recognize that that spark may have shrunk into an ember in each other, and then we do the religious act. We reach out with open arms and open hearts to remind each other of what is glowing inside, to help each other find that light and make that life return to our hearts and to our eyes and to each other's lives. That's why we come together as churches, as families, as extended families, as communities, not to let the various candles go out, not to simply curse the darkness, but you may certainly curse the darkness, but then light the candle and believe in the candle. It's okay to rage against the dying of the light. It's better not to road rage as we do against the dying of the light. And it's best of all to believe in the light, in the light that shines in every human being. And the reason that that scene in the creche, in the Christmas story, is so strong is that it takes shepherds and kings without class distinction. It takes people coming to give the gift of their presence to each other and to recognize, not simply in the narrow Christian terms, the divinity in one child, but the divinity, the miracle, the magic in every child. And by extension, the divinity, the magic, the worth in every one of our sisters and brothers. I wish you all a happy Hanukkah and a very Merry Christmas.